No, I said, you know, can you tell what the results of the blood tests are? No, we got to find the chart. I said, forget about the chart. What is the blood test? No, we got to find the chart. And I said, well, for an hour looking for the super chart, they never found it.
I thought it was on the computer now.
Let's get started. I want to compare two Rashis, and it's interesting that even though the Rashis are separated by quite a few blots, the Dibra Maskil in both cases is identical, and that's called Nifritzu Olav. So the first Rashi, Nifritzu Olav, is actually on the Mishnah, back on Chav Tes Amud Beis, the first Mishnah, the Mishnah of Lula. And Rashi has a repeat performance called Nifritzu Olav in the Mishnah Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, the second Mishnah, which is the Mishnah of Hadas. So let's go Kiseder. We'll start with the Mishnah on Daf Chav Tes Amud Beis. So Rashi Dibra Maskil Nifritzu Olav. Rashi says Mishidra. So it means the Olei Aluav was separated from the spine of the Luluv, the Shidra of the Luluv. The Eino Mechubarim. And they're not exactly attached, but we'll see what that means in a second. Ela al yidei aguda. They're not attached naturally. They're attached artificially. And Rashi compares it to Chufya. Chufya is a Gemara later on. The Gemara wants to illustrate that like a broom, you put the pieces of the broom together, you tie them together. So to hear when you have the Olei Haluav that were completely detached from the Shidra, you can tie them together, and nevertheless, the Lulav is possible. Now let's fast forward to Dibra Maskil Nifritzu Olav Handaf Lamed Beis Amud Beis. And this is the Mishnah of Hadas. Here Rashi simply says, Nashru. So this is on Lamed Beis Amud Beis. And you'll see on the left side of the column towards the bottom it says Masnisin. Nifritzu Olav is the first Rashi on the Mishnah on Lamed Beis Amud Beis. Nashru. Now there's part of the story here that's completely omitted. You know, the fact that Rashi has mentioned a Shidra, that makes sense because in the case of a Hadas, we never talk about a Shidra in a Hadas. So that's fine. I would even go a step further. There's another piece of the puzzle that Rashi left out. And what's that? Take a look again back in the story that Rashi tells us in the Mishnah on Chav Tes Amud Beis and compare that to the Rashi here on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis. Again, the Dibra Maskil is identical. Nifritzu Olav.
Is Rashi in Chav Tes, is he saying that every one of them are not connected
Maybe most of them are not connected. We usually say there's a lock of robe. We didn't get to the sugi of robe yet. Mirtz Hashem will get to that tomorrow at 8:30. But what part of the story does Rashi add here on Daf Chav Tes Amud Beis?
That they
David? Yeah, that he tied it in. See, Rashi says Ein Mechubarim. They're not naturally tied together, but Ela Yudei Aguda. Now, how does Rashi know such a thing? What do I mean? The same two words in the Mishnah, Nifritzu Olav, appear with regard to Hadassim. Now, presumably, again, you can fight me on this, I don't believe for one moment that you would find the case of Aguda in Olei Hadass, you know, that somehow you could tie them together on the stem. You agree with me, Mitch? That's highly unlikely?
Very unlikely.
So now the question becomes kind of pressing to us. Why is it that Rashi and Nifritzu Olav in Lulav insists that there was a Chibur al Yidei Aguda? And, you know, if there was some textual indication of that, you know, that the Lashon HaMishnah of Nifritzu Olav would indicate that there was an Aguda, how could you possibly say so? Because the same two words, Nifritzu Olav, appear in the Mishnah of what? Avadasim, and in the Mishnah of Avadasim, clearly we're not talking about aguda, we're not talking about binding the leaves onto the stem. In fact, Rashi doesn't mention anything about binding. Rashi just mentions that the leaves fell off.
But in this first Mishnah, you also have a case of nifrigu, which is similar, and there you talk about it.
Well, in the case of nifridu, what we have here, according to Rashi, is that mechubarim heim l'shinu, they're still attached.
But it's just contrast.
So in the case of nifridu, for sure, Rashi leaves out any discussion about aguda. That itself actually is going to be a machlokas tanoim, because of Yehuda, the Mishnah, in nifridu, if you see in the fourth line, he says, yagdenu milamal. Now we had a sugya, I'm not going to go over it now, but the sugya says that there's machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether in the case of nifridu, you need aguda, or you don't need aguda. David?
Could it be that the Chachamina with lulav is that someone could think that could be bound together?
So
one's able to do it, but one really couldn't.
Excellent. So David says the following. And I'm going to try to add a little piece to what David says. David's saying that Rashi wants to tell you a gewaltige chiddush. You might think that if the problem of nifritzu is that einu mechubarim, maybe I could solve that problem of nifritzu. In fact, in the case of nifridu, Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that you have a problem of nifridu, but you can solve it through binding, through aguda. Rashi is suggesting that in the case of nifritzu, you might think, the thought might occur to you, that if you want to solve the problem of nifritzu and you want to qualify this lulav, you can do so. What method would you use to qualify a lulav that's nifritzu? Aguda, the aguda itself in the salkadaitat here. So Rashi's telling you a chiddush here that you shouldn't think for one moment that the problem of nifritzu is a solvable problem, it's a reversible problem. No, it's an absolutely irreversible, permanent problem, and aguda is not going to help you. That's what David is saying, am I right?
Correct.
Okay. I want to add a little piece to this. I want to suggest the following. What prompts Rashi to introduce here the whole issue of Salka Daitaka? I mean, I might think that in the case of Nifritzu, if I can correct the mistake. You know, I can correct the disqualification by doing what? Aguda. Kamash Malan, Rashi wants to, again, you know, it's a little bit unusual. What I mean to say is that this is not typical of Rashi's style to create a whole Vim Tomar, Vyesh Lomar. You know, Tosis has that kind of language. As if to say that Rashi is saying Vim Tomer, and if you'll ask me, well, what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? I'm going to tell you, well, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is Aguda. What prompts Rashi to do that? That's so atypical of Rashi.
Well, we learned last week, if I'm not mistaken, that when we were talking about Aguda, we were talking about with the olive of the lulav as well, that it becomes that the Aguda is part of the lulav, and they become one piece. Is that what we learned last week?
Well, no, that's only Quinter of Yehudu says Lulav Tzarech Aga.
Right.
We're not holding now like Rav Yehudu. Okay. This Mishnah reflects the Shita of the Chachamim. Rav Yehudu has a Shita about Agad in the case of Nifridu. And also Rav Yehudu in general requires Agad. And that's going to have an impact on the Sugya Baltosif with you.
Right.
But I'm asking a slightly different question, Alan. My question is, Rashi is bothered by something over here, and I'm trying to figure out what he's bothered by. Meaning, Rashi gives me a whole song and dance to tell me that don't think, I mean, if I would rewrite Rashi, I would say, don't think that Aguda is going to help you over here. What prompts Rashi to add those words? You know, don't think that Aguda is going to help you. Again, on a textual level, it's almost a pella to try to solve this problem, because, you know, Rashi is using the words the Mishnah used the words nifritzu all twice, the same two words. In one case, Rashi adds aguda. There was no discussion about aguda. I'll prove it to you, because in the case of Adasa, the Mishnah employs the same two words, and there was no discussion about aguda. Here Rashi wants to add a little element here, as David said so well, that a chiddush, that you might think that aguda would solve the problem. But I just want to add one little piece here. Why would you think that Rashi was, in a sense, compelled to add the element of aguda here? So what I want to learn with you in order to answer that question is a sugya here on Daf Lamed Beis on the Beis. We're not going to go through the entire sugya now, but what I want to touch on is a machlokes between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. And I think it's a very fundamental machlokes.
Which is where?
We're now on Daf Lamed Beis on the Beis. And we're counting approximately 10 lines down from the top. And if you'll see on the right side, the Tosus Dira Maskil Drachela, right across from there, at the end of the line, it says, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. Now that comment of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel is attached to the Mishnah. This is the last part of the first Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah, which is very lengthy and very complicated, goes through the various psulim of lulav. And the last part of the Mishnah, specifically the last line in the Mishnah, addresses the question of the shear of a lulav. What's the minimum shear of a lulav? Now, this question of what the minimum shear of the lulav is addressed by Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara Daf Lamed Beis Amid Beis. And it's almost as if Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan are oblivious to the Mishnah. It's like as if they felt that they were discovering a new question, what's the shear of a lulav? The Mishnah itself addresses the question, what's the shear of a lulav? However, they came up with a whole different answer to that question. The Mishnah's answer to that question was Shlosha Tfachim. They came up with a different answer. Anybody know what their answer was?
Arba
Tfachim, exactly, four Tfachim. And then the Gemara is going to try to reconcile the Mishnah with both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. So again, on one hand, both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan have a basic agreement about the shear of a lulav. When I say basic, I mean very basic, you know, very abstract. Namely, the number four. So four tefachim, that's the key of keys. But there's a radical difference between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan about what part of the lulav has to be four tefachim. Shmuel says the following: Shir hadas va'arova shlosha. Both hadas and the arova have the same shir, which is called three tefachim. But lulav arba, lulav requires a fourth tefach. And why is that? Kidei shehei lulav yotze min hadas tefach. That the lulav should tower over and above the hadas by a tefach. So you have the hadas goes up three tefachim, the lulav goes up an extra tefach, and it's four tefachim. Now, what Shmuel is referring to is the entire lulav. What do I mean by the entire lulav? From the bottom all the way up to the top. Now, in a lulav, we have two basic parts to the lulav. We have the shidra that goes from the bottom up to almost the top. And then at some point, the shidra splits off into various olim, into different leaves. So Shmuel says that the lulav has to be four tefachim. It means that the composition of these four tefachim is the entire lulav. What I mean by the entire lulav is lafuki Rav Parnach Amar Rav Yochanan Shidro Shalulav Tzach Yetzi Min Adas Tefach. According to Rav Yochanan, it's not enough that the lulav from the beginning all the way to the top is four tefachim, but rather what you need is that the shidra be four tefachim. What's above four tefachim, the olim, that's wonderful. You know, you might have a, like, you know, you could have a lulav according to Rabbi Yochanan that might be six tefachim high. It might be even more. But the main thing is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, I got to measure from the bottom of the lulav, which means from the beginning of the shidra, all the way up to the top of the shidra, which I'm just going to use a generic term. Don't take me literally on this. That's halfway up the lulav. I don't mean that literally. That's halfway up the lulav, and up to that halfway midpoint of the lulav, which is the end of the shidra, I need four tefachim. Whereas Shmuel says, to get my four tefach, I could use what? The entire lulav, all the way up to the taf. So I'm trying to figure out what two things here. There are two questions that I have here. One question is the question that every lamdan has to ask himself when he sees a sugya like this. What's the machlokas between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan? What are they arguing about? I mean, I know the mitzvahs, I know the nafkamina, and it's a tremendous nafkamina, because let's say you had a shidra that reached 3.9 tefachim. The lulav itself is 10 tefachim high. According to Shmuel, that lulav is kosher. According to Rav Yochanan, it's possible because the top of the shidra reaches 3.9 tefachim. So that I understand, but what are they fighting about? We call it the Yisod HaMachlokas, you know, the fun. And secondly, it seems to me that, and I hope I'm right here, this is what I found in the Sfarim, that in the case of the Hadas, for example, what's the Shir of Hadas?
Three
Tfachim. Everybody agrees that the Shir of the Hadas is what's called the Eitz. The reason for it, I'll explain what I mean. The Torah describes the Hadas in a very mysterious, ambiguous way. It's called Anaf Eitz Ovos. And the part of the Hadas that's the two parts of the Hadas, just like we said, the two parts of the Lulav. So the Lulav we call it a Shidra. In the case of the Hadas, we call it the Eitz. The Eitz. Otherwise, it's called the Anaf, not in biblical terms, but in Talmudic terms. In the Gemara, it's called an Anaf, but in the Chumash, the Anaf is referring to the Olam. So you have the stem, we'll call it the stem of the Hadas, and then you have the leaves on the Hadas. And the shear of the Hadas has to be in the Eitz. And that's what the Mefarshim say. You and I could have said differently. Let's say, for example, the top leaves of the Hadas shoot out above the top of the stem. Well, according to Shmuel, at least, who, in the case of a lulav, calculates the olim in the four, in the shear of four tefachim. In the case of the Hadas, Shmuel might have said that the olim that rise above three tefachim. No, let me scratch that. The top of the stem is 2.9 tefachim, but the olim that go above the stem, which means that extra 0.1 of a tefach, they could also be calculated. And nobody says such a thing. They all say that as far as Hadas is concerned, you hold on to the stem, meaning you put your finger inside the olim. Are you with me on this? You know, because the olim might rise above the top of the stem, but in order to, you know, when you take out your meter, as we call it here in Israel, you know, the measuring rod, you've got to measure three tefachim from stem to stem, from the beginning of the stem to the end of the stem. Okay, Rabbi Altai, who can give it to me? What's the machlokas here between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan?
What's the measurement? What's the ikra of the man of each bit?
The measurement of the tefach.
No, no, but I'm asking, well, basically, you know, we're looking for two abstract definitions of what? Of a lulav. What are those? John, can you help me out here? What are the two abstract definitions? Rabbi Yochanan is defining a lulav as what?
A shidra.
And Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Shmuel, is defining the lulav as shidra plus olim. I mean, I didn't add much, you know, it's just rewriting the text of the Gemara. In other words, if the Gemara would have said b'maika mifli, I would have said that l'divrei Rabbi Yochanan lulav ha'ayinu shidra, l'divrei Shmuel lulav ha'ava shidra plus olim. The olim are also part of the lulav. But if this be the case, then what would be the conclusion as far as Hadassim are concerned? In other words, if we assume, as the Mefarshim say, that in the case Hadassim, even Shmuel would agree that you define the shear of Gimel Tfachim by what?
Stem.
By the stem, the eights, and not by the olim. So then we're going to have to assume that the whole machlok stream of Yochanan and Shmuel is only in the case of a lulav, but in the case of the Hadassim, then even Shmuel agrees to Rabbi Yochanan's basic definition that it depends on the shidra. Again, there's no shidra per se in that terminology in the case of a hadas, but the parallel to the shidra is the eights of the hadas from which the olim come out. David, are you going to add something?
I want to answer your question, maybe.
Vakasha, consider it as if I can answer the question.
Possibly, maybe the question is, how do you define the min of a lulav? Is the min, the shidra alone, is that the min, or do you need the leaves plus the min to have a shame lulav?
Okay, excellent. So are the olive integrated into the lulav to generate the shame lulav? And the nafkamina is a tremendous nafkamina as to whether or not the shir of dal tvachim could include the olive. So Shmuel integrates the olim into the Shem Lulav. The Shem Lulav incorporates not only the Shidra, it's not limited to the Shidra, but it also includes the olim. And Rabbi Yochanan says, name, what is the Shem Lulav? The Shem Lulav is the Shidra. The olim are nice embellishments, and we need them, and so forth and so on. But that's not the essence of the Lulav. We paskin, by the way, it's very interesting, like Shmuel in this case. The question is, why? That's not simple. Now, the Pella is that in the case of Hadassim, even Shmuel would agree, because we don't find a machlokas, Shmuel doesn't object against Rabbi Yochanan, that it is, again, I'm using quotation marks, it is the Shidra of the Hadass that defines the Shir of Gimel Tfachim. And the Olim are not to be integrated into the Shir of Gimel Tfachim. What does that mean, therefore? If everything we've said until now is correct, only Hashem knows, but we're making an effort here, then what conclusion do we have to derive about the Hadass?
Leaves don't count.
That the leaves don't count. That just like Rabbi Yochanan says in the case of the lulav, that the leaves don't count, it doesn't mean they don't count. I mean, you have to beautify the lulavs, you have to have leaves, and you have to identify the species of the lulav, and if the lulav is ripped and stripped of all its of all its branches, you have a problem. But when you talk about the basic nitty gritty fundamental definition of the lulav, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's the shidra. And it seems that Shmuel accepted Rabbi Yochanan's view of lulav in the case of what? Of hadas. And I'm just wondering, if that be the case, then let's take a minute to read the Mishnah at the beginning of our Perek according to Shmuel. The Mishnah says, Nifritzu olav pasul. What question should you ask on this Mishnah? It's a kind of a question that the Gemara asks all over the place, almost on every Mishnah, almost on every page of every folio of the Talmud. Starts with a pay and ends with an aleph in Aramaic. Pshita! Why do I say it's pshita? What would happen if I took a scissors, I'm just dramatizing this, don't take me literally, and I cut out the words nifritzu olav? You've got no olim on this lulav. I'll show you a gemara about no olim on a lulav. This is a gemara, see if I can find it, called Afta. Take a look at Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph for a moment. And if you count up from the bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph approximately 12, 13 lines, you'll see two words at the end of a line. The line begins with the word Charusa and ends with the words V'ema Ufta. This is the sugya trying to figure out what is kapos tvarim? The Torah doesn't call it a lulav. And the Gemara goes through a whole bunch of variations and possibilities, candidates for what kapos tvarim might, what might be kapos tvarim. One of them is called an ufta. Everybody knows what an ufta is, right? And I'll prove to you, because Rashi has to translate it to French. That itself proves that everybody knew what an ufta was. So Rashi says that an ufta, I actually have a picture of an ufta in this picture book, is mi'ikar ha-dekelhu. That's what we call the trunk of the tree, right? V'hu chalak. What does Rashi mean? Literally, chalak means smooth. V'ein anaf yotzi v'medu l'kan l'kan. There are no leaves that come out of it. No branches, for that matter. Right? So, you've all seen a date tree, on the bottom it has those This one is not so clear, but here, this would be a good example of ufta. Okay, can you see that? I think I showed it to you once before. Yeah. Right, these pieces here on the trunk of the tree. I have one in my backyard, except I think that what I have is a canary tree, because my trunk looks more like this. Has very small ufta, a klenik ufta. But a real olive tree has a greiser ufta. And that's a pun, because ufta means to accomplish something, an uftu. So it's a greiser uftu. That's my canary tree. But that's not a lulav. The lulav tree, right, has this one. And that's called ufta. Now, why is an ufta excluded? And the Gemara rejects the possibility that lulav could be the ufta. Now, you can't tell me it's not a min dekel, because the ufta is like the trunk of the dekel tree. So Rashi says, V'ein anaf yotze mikan ulukan. There are no anafim. There are no leaves that go out of it. This again supports our position, and Shmuel would be very happy, I think, if he was here in the classroom, that the leaves of the lulav are essential. They're part of the definition of a lulav. And where in the pasuk does it say that the leaves are part of the definition? So Rashi says, She'ein l'cha kafus amen. In other words, we require kafus, meaning the potential of kafus. The potential of kafus means that you have leaves coming out of the lulav, and you have potential of attaching those leaves to the shidra. That's called kafus. So now I ask my following question. Pshita. We're talking about a lulav shenifritzu olav. Rashi says, nifritzu olav, mea shidra, v'eino mechubarim. Again, I stopped in the middle of the sentence for a definite reason. V'eino mechubarim. Rav Osai, what word would you use to describe a lulav whose olim were detached, v'eino mechubarim l'shidra? What's that called, Rav Osai? Ufta. That's called an ufta. I'm getting used to these Aramaic words. It's an ufta. What's an ufta? Again, I don't mean literally it's an ufta. It's not literally an ufta. Ufta is on the bottom of the tree, in the trunk. And now we're talking about the leaves, you know, the branches of the tree. But if you take those branches, which is a shidra, and you strip them of their leaves, then that's exactly what lufta is. Because Rashi says, what's the problem with lufta? She'ein anofim yotze mikan umikan. Did I say lufta or ufta? I meant to say ufta. I said lufta. So who asks this question, Pshita? Rashi asks this question. Because otherwise, what prompts Rashi to give you this whole shtickl Torah? Ela al yidei aguda. Shkoyach. But Rashi's being mechadish kiddushim here. You want to know what the chiddush of the Mishnah is. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that even if I bind together the pieces of the... leaves of the, what do you call it?
Olive.
The leaves, right, the olive of the lulav, and I bind them together to the shidra. I'm going to use crazy glue, you know, whatever I have to use. You have to worry about chatzitza and the shade of mino and so forth. Rashi says it still remains possible. Where's Rashi coming from? The same two words, nifritzu olive, appear in the Mishnah Hadas. And there clearly there was no aguda. It's not shayach aguda, but in terms of the lexicon of the translation, what we call in Yiddish teicher, you know, the translation of the words nifritzu olav, nowhere do the words nifritzu olav indicate that there was an aguda. So why does Rashi have to invent this whole story that even though there was an aguda? And the answer is that Rashi's trying to answer what question?
What's the definition?
Pshita. Are you with me on that? Pshita. I don't know if I got my message across. Why do I say this is pshita? It's pshita because, as we've established according to Shmuel, the olim of the lulav are an integral part of the lulav. It's not just an embellishment that from the shidra you have olim. the lulav itself is comprised of shidra plus olim. And that's why the Gemara excludes ufta, says Rashi, because ufta has no olim on it. It cannot be a lulav. No, so Rashi now has a real headache. I mean, the Mishnah has to tell me that nifritzu olav and a lulav is possible. If it's nifritzu olav, thus ain't the lulav. And the reason for that is because the olim are an integral part of the definition of the lulav. Now, again, if you had Rabbi Yochanan, that would be a whole different story, because Rabbi Yochanan defines lulav as what?
Sure.
As the shidra, even without the olim. Now, if that be the case, so nifritzu olav, fakeret. I have to ask a different question according to Rabbi Yochanan. My question according to Rabbi Yochanan is, and I'm going to have to ask the same question according to Rabbi Yochanan on the case of Charusa, but there I have a simple answer. I'm going to ask the question according to Rabbi Yochanan, why is nifritzu olav possible? So you're going to tell me all you're left with after nifritzu olav is a bare shidra. No, maybe according to Rabbi Yochanan that should be enough to qualify as a lulav. See, the case of ufta is different, because there again, David, what do we want to do? We want to establish what a lulav is. You know, you want to know what's kapos tmarim. So kapos tmarim means that it grows in its natural botanical state together with olive. Correct?
Right.
And therefore charusa is excluded, because charusa never has olim to it. But if I have a lulav, and I know it's a lulav, do I need the olim of the lulav? Well, according to Rabbi Yochanan, maybe I don't. So then the Mishnah tells me a chiddush. The chiddush is that I need the olim. Why? Because there's another halacha called hadar.
Well, that's right? What Rashi says. That's why I was confused, because Rashi is alluding. If it was going to Shmuel, it'd be possible because it's possible. It's missing its essential element.
Right.
But that's not the reason Rashi says. And he says it's only possible because it's hadar. So I thought he was talking about going to Rabbi Yochanan.
So it could be that maybe what Rashi is doing is he's covering all his bases here. On the one hand, he wants to tell you what the chiddush is, even according to Shmuel. Right? Because going to Shmuel, that the olim are essential to the Shem Lulav. So what was the halakha that nifritzu olav could be kosher? And Rashi says, you might think that by attaching the olim artificially to the lulav, you have now a lulav. Why? Because you have both the shidra and the olim. And then Rashi tells you, but at the end of the day, it's possible. Why is it possible? So I don't know. See, here you can go in two different ways. Either Rashi quotes the halakha of hadar in order to satisfy Rabbi Yochanan, or Rashi holds that Enchinam the Aguda could reestablish and resurrect the old lulav with olim out of the dead. But the only problem is that's not hadar. Hadar means it's got its olim in a natural state. Okay. Now I want to learn with you a sugya called the Esrog Hayorok. Hayorok. And this is on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. Okay then? Now, just to put the sugya into its broader context, we have a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda about a dried up lulav. Kohen Chachamim, and the Mishnah only mentions the sheet of the Chachamim, a lulav hayomesh is possible. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a lulav hayomesh is kosher. Okay. Comes along Rava, and he says the following. He says that the issue of Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim revolves around hadar, because the Torah only uses the word hadar in the context of what, Rav Osai? The Esrog. Okay? And lulav hayomesh may not require hadar. So that depends upon whether you have a hekesh between all the minim and Esrog. So the Chachamim assume the hekesh. And just like the Torah spells out that an esrog requires hadar, so too all the minim require hadar, and that's going to exclude yavesh. But Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have the requirement of hadar. Now the Gemara establishes, and this is the Pella, that Rabbi Yehuda rejects the requirement of hadar even in the case of esrog. That's the Pella. because the Torah says creates hadar. So how could Rabbi Yehuda just white out the word hadar? So the Gemara says that hadar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, means something totally different. Hadar by Ilan Mishana Lashana, fine. So now the Gemara wants to prove that even Rabbi Yehuda requires hadar. And that, again, if you could find the Gemara, I'll try to. It's right smack in the middle of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. And the Gemara, the first word in the line is Yehuda. I don't know if that helps anybody. For me, it would help. I don't know. So if you want to just somehow just put your finger right down in the middle of the page and see if you find a line that starts with Yehuda. Can you find such a thing? So now I want you to move your finger all the way to the end of that line, and the last word in that line is velo. And the Gemara asks the following question. This is like a rhetorical question. The lo boy hadar, meaning Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hadar. Va'anantnan, we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah says, Hayorok kikrasi, if the lulav is pure green, a very dark green, Rabbi Meir Machshir, Rabbi Meir says it's kosher, and Rabbi Yehuda posel. And the Gemara thinks, Lav mishum deboy hadar. How can you tell me that Gemara just established that Rabbi Yehuda rejects the requirement of hadar? And he has a reinterpretation of the pasuk creates hadar. Here's the case of Yarel Kakrasi, and Rabbi Yehuda passels the esrog. And why? So the Gemara thinks it's because of what? Hadar. It's lacking in hadar. So you see that even Rabbi Yehuda requires hadar, at least in the case of esrog. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not why Rabbi Yehuda passels a yarok, but rather mishum de lo gomar peri." So let's just translate the Gemara literally. We need, in the case of an esrog, a pre. How do I know I need a pre? Because the Torah calls it pre-eitz hadar. And a pre is a fruit that developed on the tree to a certain maturation point. And only if it got to that point, then it's called a pre. So let me give you an example. Let's say that an esrog tree, for the first 3 years that it produces esrogim, it's arla, correct? And there are very severe restrictions in the case of arla. But at what point does the iser arla emerge? Meaning the fruit develops from a very small, something called smadar, which is only like a little bud, and then it becomes bosar, and then from bosar it reaches a state of havashlish. You know, there are different stages in development. So the Gemara establishes here that when Rabbi Yehuda says that Yarek HaKrasi is possible, his problem is not hadar. Maybe if you like green, you know, you have the women in green, right? So the green is a good color. All of Canada is in green. Anybody know that? Okay. Anyway, I spent 2 years in Canada, so you have to be into green. But right, if you look at this cover, I mean, there are a couple of yellow spots, but it's mostly green. So on Sukkot, we like the color green. So why is an esrog that's green possible? So you're going to tell me it's not beautiful? It's lacking in hadar? Well, the pasuk says creates hadar, but that doesn't mean that a green esrog is not hadar. And we've already established that an esrog ayavesh, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is kosher, and certainly lacking in hadar. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hadar. So we have to come up with a new explanation why Rabbi Yehuda passels an esrog ayarok. So Gemara says, because if it's green, what does that indicate? That it hasn't developed to the mature state of pre. And the precondition for... Oh, that's it. Precondition. The precondition for pre-eitz hadar is the gmar pre. It has to be a gmar pre. Okay. Now take a look for a minute at Tosus Dibra Maskil Hayoro Kikresi. Again, it's a long Tosus. I'm not going to do it with you now. But at the very end of the Tosus, again, we have to find the place here. You'll go up three lines before the end of the Tosus. You see the word Vachad at the beginning of Tosus, of that line? Now I want you to move your finger across the line to the word V'osam Esrogim Habotim. Okay. So Tosus is somewhere in Europe. Let's say he's in Germany, maybe he's in France. And he says that in our location, Ha'esrogim ha'boim lefanenu yerukim kekresi. In other words, when I go to the market, he says Tosus, what I find in the local schera on the racks, you know, in the esrog baskets, I find that they are very green. Kshere. They're kosher. Now, if I didn't read the next three words, I would say maybe he's going to Rabbi Meir, maybe we pass on to Rabbi Meir. But he says, Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda just finished saying that what? That an esrog hayara kekresi is possible, says Tosus, our esrogim are kosher. Even though boim lefanenu, when they come in front of us, what do they look like when they get to us?
They
yaro kekresi. Oh, says Tosus, you could almost imagine the psychology. Tosus is very nervous. You know, if we accept Rabbi Yehuda the Shita, what are we going to do with all our esrogim? You know, we're in trouble. So he says, Kishechozrim lemare shar hesrogim. When they return to the appearance of other esrogim, what does it mean by the appearance of other esrogim?
Yellow.
They get yellow.
There's one word that doesn't fit there.
Chozrim.
Oh, so what does kishechozrim mean?
Shouldn't be
kishechozrim. Let me give you two possibilities. And tell me what do you hear in the word kishechozrim? One way of saying is that Tosus means that b'teva ha'esrogim shechozrim lios kishar esrogim. I added a whole bunch of words into Tosus. The other way of saying it is that what Tosus means is kishechozrim, when they become yellow, then they're kosher. Does anybody hear the difference between the two?
Yeah.
Let me go over it one more time. In my first shot, what I'm saying is that since the natural propensity of this esrog that is coming from wherever, and we'll say northern Germany or wherever it's coming from, is that they start green, but they eventually become yellow, therefore they're kosher. And that's not the case of Rabbi Yehuda. That's one way of learning Tosus. The other way of learning Tosus is that these esrogim become ksherim when they become yellow, but not until they become yellow. Which one of the two interpretations do you hear in the Tosus? Does he say im chozrim?
No.
Yes. No, he says kishechozrim, am I right?
Right.
Kishechozrim, when they become yellow, v'domim lamara shar esrogim, then it's kosher.
Well, that's because what bothers Tosus is if you pick the peri before it's kosher, the fact that it then subsequently matures off the tree, does that count or not? Or has already been?
Excellent. So Alan points out, look at the next two words in Tosus. And Tosus says, afilu bitolush. What's going to happen is that you cut it down from the tree, these esrogim are green. But liachar sheshou b'kli, you know, you put them in some sort of a vessel, maybe you put a banana inside, whatever your minig is, and zman merubah, you leave it there for a long time. It doesn't tell you how long, apparently it takes a while, and then they become yellow. Devadai gomar piryam. Right, Tosus is focused on the three words in the Gemara. The Gemara says, don't misunderstand Rabbi Yehuda. and mix a yarik a crazy because it's not hadar. No, Rabbi Yehuda nixes yarik a crazy because it's not gvar pri. So Tosfos says, okay, we're going to salvage all of esrogim. How? We're going to place them into some sort of a vessel, and it's going to take a while, but don't lose hope, because it's going to turn yellow. And that means that once it turns yellow, it reaches the state of Gemar Puri.
This has to happen before Sukkot.
Yeah, because if it happens after Sukkot, you're in deep trouble. Because
yes.
If it's going to be green on Sukkot, Tosfos says you're not Yotze. So you better make sure that you get a hold of your green Esrog early enough before Yontif, so that you can subject it to this entire process. And then at the end of the process, Kisha Chozrim Lamara Sharis Rogim, even though you did that when it was Tolush, and even though it took a long time, it's Vadeg Mar Peri, and go ahead and use the Esrog. So Rabosai, I thought that hands down, there was nothing to talk about here, and it was crystal clear that according to Tosfos, an Esrog HaYorik is possible. It only becomes kashik shechozim leos kemara shar esrogim, but we have to wait that period of time. And if Yotif chaps me before that period of time passes and it's still green, then I'm not Yotze. But Pili Ploim, I want to quote to you, you know, this whole discussion is in Shulchan Aruch Tafresh Mem Ches, if you want to make a note of it. And there are like tons of afarshim there. There's the Aruch Laner, who has a peerage called Bikur Yaakov. There's the Beis Meir, there's the Taz. Maybe we'll go through each one of them, but they pretty much all say the same thing. Here, I'll read to you the language of the Beis Meir. The Beis Meir says that mashma midivrei Tosfos. Okay, you know what? I'm going to leave the Beis Meir for one more minute. The Taz is a little bit. Clearer. The Taz says, Kavanas Atosis Lahakshir Yorok Kakrasi, Limafreya Afil Biodo Yorok. Wow, he introduced a new word here called Limafreya. I mean, we're familiar with the word Limafreya. Limafreya is one of the most complicated words in all of Shas. Limafreya means that what I do now will be determined later on retroactively. So the Taz learns, he says, Afilu bi odo yarok, that it's kosher. Why? Because he says, again, I'm sorry, I have so many things on my page here. He says,
it will turn yellow.
He says, Kavana satos lahashil mafreya bi odo yarok, that if you wait long enough, it's going to turn yellow. So now, Don, let's go back to your question. Right now, it's the first day of Sukkot, and what's the color of my esrog?
Green.
Green. The Taz says that according to Tosfos, you could be yotzei with that esrog. Again, you're playing a little bit of a gambling, you know, a Russian roulette here, because you're banking on the fact that it will turn yellow. Again, I don't know when it's going to turn yellow. Tosfos talks about Zman Meruba. It may take a while, but it doesn't matter. Right now, I can be Yotze the mitzvah, because Lamafreya, it was yellow.
Many of the etrogim today are green.
I mean, Tosfos said it 1,000 years ago. He says, "How osam etrogim aboyim lefanenu, and yerukim kikrasi." They're green.
But if it never turns yellow, then
you're in trouble.
Then you find out you weren't Yosef.
Exactly.
But it's too late to take to the
too about. Late. There's no touch lumen for the mitzvah of Zalzamin.
So don't look.
You need Lamafreya. You're totally banking on Lamafreya. Now, we read another part of the Taz. The Taz says, the Esal Kedaitoch, if you're going to tell me that according to Tosfos, Ein al kosher elo li achar shechaza lemare hakosher. If you're going to tell me that it only becomes kosher after what?
After
the fact that it's yellow, is my rabusa disman meruba? Why does Tosfos have to tell me that it takes a long time until it becomes yellow? Came in the hadar hadar. If it went back to being yellow, then it went back to being yellow. So why do you have to tell me it took me 2 weeks until it became yellow? Says the Taz, Muchach, it means you see for Tosis that Tosis holds that even though it's not yellow, it's green, you can still be Yotze. And you can apply the principle of Mafreya even Lizman Maruba. I mean, even though you have to wait a good amount of time until finally it turns yellow, I can still apply L'mafreya. There's no time limit in L'mafreya. That's the way the Taz understands the Tosis. The only question I have on the Taz is, how is he reading the word Kishechozrim? Unless he had a different gear again. Exactly, he probably convinced you that Tosis had a different deck.
Does anybody know, I don't know the color chart that well, but is there any color with yellow that'll produce green? Is brown and green and yellow?
That's too complicated.
Yellow and blue becomes green.
Yellow and blue? Mm-hmm. Yellow and blue becomes green.
Yeah. That's what green is. Green is not natural.
Yeah.
So the prime color, yellow and blue.
So maybe Tosis.
Let me know when the discussion's over.
Sorry.
No. I you misunderstood me. I just want to know. My head is in the.
Maybe what Taz is saying is that within the color green, there is the color yellow. It's just we have to wait for the other thing that's masking it to go away to leave the color yellow. So it's not like this.
Alan, I don't understand what bothers you. The Taz is so crystal clear. Why do you want to create new ideas?
Because that's why he says the clothes there.
No, he says the file. What do you mean he says chos? He says the isal kedaita eno kosher elik shechozer lios kemara kosher.
Right.
He says that can't be because then my rabusa disman maruba. You're talking now when the first day of Yom Tov was already after the Zman Merubah. What do you have in front of you? A yellow esrog. So why is Tosfos saying, I forgot the Zman Merubah?
Yeah.
Clearly, therefore, he says, you must apply the rule that now it's green, but the Mafreya becomes kosher because it comes yellow. Oh, now you have a Salkadaita. Tosfos wants to ask the final question, what if it takes ages until finally it becomes yellow? It doesn't matter. Because at the end of there's light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how long that tunnel is, and we can apply the principle of Mafreya. I don't have any problem with the Taz. The Taz is crystal clear.
How does he know it'll become yellow? Maybe it won't become yellow.
Well, we've said that.
So that's the base mayor. The base mayor says that what does Tosis mean when he says Kisha Chozrim? So the base mayor says Mashma midivrei Tosis de machshirim esrog hayork rak liachar shehitziv, it became yellow. V'atam mishum dechayshinon shem olo yatziv.
Because according to the Taz, there is no definition of when is nigmar period. Because they only know that lemafreya. In other words, he's saying nigmar period, turn yellow. There's a time gap. We don't know how long that'll take. But what was the definition of nigmar period that did buy in? In other words, you could say something about the hakel. You should say you could use it, but you don't want to make a broken.
Right. That's the base mayor. The base mayor is worried about the following. It's very nice. Again, he didn't address the Taz, but he's saying it's very nice that the Taz says let's wait until I'm sorry. That the Taz says that we're going to find out later on that it's yellow. That's wonderful. But what if you find out later on that it never turned yellow? So that's the nervous tension of the base mayor. The base mayor was Rav in Poland about 150 years ago in a city called Posen. If you know anyone the last name Posen, he probably came from the same town as the base mayor. And the base mayor says, you know what? I would not recommend that you rely on the Taz as L'mafreya. Not that he disagrees with the Taz. He's on the same page as the Taz. He has a technical problem with applying the Taz. And that is, you might be very disappointed if down the line it turns out that it never actually turned yellow. So according to the base mayor, wait until it turns yellow, and Tosis is Meduya Kishechozrim, in order to clarify that it was a Gemar Peri, it wasn't that it was green and it always stayed green, because otherwise you're putting your neck out on the line. It's a real
job. Where did the Taz live?
The Taz also lived in Poland. The Taz actually lived in Lithuania, but you're talking hundreds of years before the Taz.
I was going to say whether or not the mentality of the Ismair is that in Poland it was already very, very cold already Sukkot time. And maybe somehow the temperature affected its ability to turn yellow.
Excellent. So hold on for that just for 1 minute, Yechiel, because I'm gonna try to be medayik in the Mishnah Brura that a lot depends upon where the esrog is coming from. But that's already like shlav bet, meaning shlav aleph is is I'm raising a fundamental question here. How do we understand the law of yellow, the requirement of yellow in Esrog? One way of saying it is that an Esrog has to be yellow, period. A green Esrog does hasten can Esrog. The other way of saying it is, I just need yellow to determine and be absolutely sure that there's a Gemara Peri over here. And now I can apply one of two rules. I could either say Lamafreya, you know, later on it's going to turn yellow down the line, or I'm going to say make sure it turns yellow now because I don't want to take any chances. But both the Taz and the Beis Meir, and if we had time we'd go through the Bikurei Yaakov as well, they all are on the same page. That basically, I don't need yellow. I only need yellow as a simon ledover, not a sibo ledover. It's only a simon. It's only an indication that I have here a fruit that has a gemar peri. The gemar peri expresses itself in the potential to turn yellow. And if it doesn't turn yellow, then it's not a gemar peri. It was plucked prematurely. It'll never mature to become a gemar peri. So now the Taz has a proof. What's the raya of the Taz? Because Tosus says, look at Tosus one more time, afilu kishol afilu zman meruba. Tosus says zman meruba. Well, so let's put it on the back burners for just 1 minute, the afilu zman meruba in Tosus. Let's go back to the previous phrase in Tosfos, afilu b'tolsh.
Wait
a second, Alan. Do me a favor. You know, don't quote your Bekiyas and Shas until I figure the sugya out. Right now, I'm just trying to translate the words. And it doesn't say in the words, adav shalapalyo. Okay, so let me just get through the words. I beg you, don't hit me with Shas. I know you're a Shas bitch, but it doesn't help me. So let's go through the words. So Tosis says, afilu b'tolsh. So what's afilu b'tolsh? Tosis says the following, that when an esrog turns yellow, there are two ways of understanding the yellowness. You could say that the yellowness clearly indicates that there's Gemara Pri. Because right, the Gemara says the problem of Yorok is Gemara Pri. But there's another way of understanding Yorok. Sohov, meaning yellow. Maybe the Pri turns yellow, not because of Gemara Pri. It's a kilkul, it's some sort of anomaly. It's not indicative of the fact that this fruit is mature. And I'll prove it to you. When did it become yellow?
After
it was cut, off the tree.
So why does that prove it?
The fact that it became yellow after it was cut off the tree means that in and of itself, in its natural state, it was not a Gemar Pri. And the yellowness is not indicative of anything. So Tosis nay nafilu b'tolush. Tosis wants to be mechadish that even though it became yellow b'tolush, that yellowness is still a proof that it was a gemar pri. In other words, what I have here, let's say I plucked the esrog off the tree on erev Sukkos, you know, chatzos hayom v'yelach, right? And now I take this esrog which is green, and I shake it the very next morning. Right, 12 hours later. Right, 12 hours later, I wake up for Vasikin and I shake my esrog. Like they say that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he waited the whole night. He had his esrog inside a glass thing, and he waited the whole night till he saw daybreak. And what did he do? He lunged for the esrog, and he had to have stitches because he forgot that it was in a glass. That's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So what happened over here? The esrog is green, correct? The esrog is green. So according to the Taz, even though the esrog is green, it's a kosher esrog, as long as the condition of Gemar Peri is clinched, and that could happen way down the line, and that's Lamafreya. But we could say, no, that's not what Tosfos has in mind. Tosfos says, Kishachozrin Lios Mar'eim Kimara Esro. It's only kosher from the time it became yellow. So what did Tosfos have to add? Yafilu B'tolush. The Tosfos wants to tell you that if it was plucked on, let's say, day one, and then it became yellow on day two, and I used it on day three, which was the first day of Yontif, Tosfos says, that's a kosher esrog. Don't think that since at the time of the Talisha it was what? Green. It was green. Any kind of yellowness is not indicative of Gemar Peri. It's only some sort of a fluke. It's an anomaly. The fruit is getting ruined. Kamashlon says Tosis. The Chiddush is that it doesn't have to be green. It doesn't have to be yellow at the time that I took it off the tree. It has to be yellow at the time of the Netilas Lulav. Not because of the Beis Meir, that the Beis Meir is saying don't take any chances. Even if the climactic conditions would be such that I can guarantee you that down the line it's going to become yellow, Tosfos says that's not enough. It's got to be yellow at the time of the Netilas Lulav, and that's why Tosfos says Kishachozrin Lios Mariam. And Tosfos says, but don't think that I need a Mara Kemara Esrog at the time of the Tlisha, meaning in its natural growth stage it matured completely. No, the maturation process might have to continue a little bit later on, but I have the Gemar Pri when? Before I take the Esrog. So the Gemar Pri, says Tosfos, is when it becomes yellow. That's when it becomes kosher. And Tosfos wants to be a Chadish. Don't think that it has to be yellow already at the time of what? Of the Tlisha, I feel a bit tallish, even if during the time after the subsequent to the Tlisha it became yellow. That's enough, says Tosfos, to make it into a kosher esrog. It became a Gemar. The process of Gemar Pri took place after you took it off. Or alternatively, again, you could say that there was, like the Taz wants to say, that already now I don't have to worry about Gemar Pri, and somehow I can rely on the fact that later, sometime down the line, it's going to become yellow, and then Gloy Milsum Afreya, I know that there was a Gemar Pri at the time that it was yellow. So again, Rabosai, just think about the following, and that's what I wanted to say today, that there's a fundamental machlokas between two interpretations of Tosfos. And it all depends on how you interpret the word kishachozrin. One interpretation would be that you need the esrog to be yellow at the time of the netila. That's a kosher esrog. And the other way of saying it is that no, I don't need yellow. Green esrog is also kosher, as long as I can prove that it was Gemar Pri. When will I finally have... In other words, the yellowness of the esrog, according to the Taz, and for that matter the Beis Meir as well, is only a Tanai. Right? I could be Makadosh and Isha today, and then the Tanai will be Mekuyim 50 years from now. But right now she's Mekudeshes because of the principle of Lamafre. So too, I need that ultimately this esrog become yellow, because that clinches and clarifies beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is a Gemar Pri. And now I can apply the principle of Lumafre. Comes with Beis Meir and he says, I'm nervous about this. You know, this gets me very concerned. Why? Because how do you know which birdie is going to convince you and guarantee you that Enochinami down the line is going to turn yellow? So let's wait till it turns yellow. So you see, at least the Beis Meir tried to fit his pshat in Tosfos into the word Kishachozrim. The Taz is not even bothered by that. Now, what was the Taz's proof? Let's go over it again. The Taz says, what's this Zman Merubah? Who cares about Zman Merubah? He's got a yellow esrog. The answer is that if there's a Zman Merubah, if it takes so long for the esrog to turn yellow, then maybe the yellowness is not at all a proof of Gemar Peri. Maybe the yellowness is some sort of a freak of nature, and it doesn't establish in my paper. He says, Tosfos, no, that's not how the halacha operates. The halacha says if it turns yellow, it's a kosher esrog. Don't even bother asking, well, why did it take so long until it turned yellow? And you could have one esrog that takes a week to turn yellow. So you cut it down from the tree, and a week later it's yellow. You could have another esrog that takes 2 weeks till it turns yellow. And another element, it doesn't matter. It says, Tosfos, as long as it turns yellow. And here, Rabbi Osai, I want to ask the following question. Why does the Esrog have to be yellow? If our pshat and Tosis is correct, kishachozrin, and we're not going to go the way the base mayor said it. The base mayor wants to know, don't take any chances, maybe it will turn yellow, maybe it won't turn yellow, and you won't be able to apply the mafreya. Forget about all that. Tosis says it's got to be yellow. Why? So I want to quote to you, this is the Raivi that's quoted in the Ran, in the Ritva, in the Mishkanos Yaakov, everybody and their uncle quotes the Raivi. The Ravid has a list of colors that are possible in Esrog, Shachar and Lavan, and on this list he's got Yarrow Kikrasi. Now wait a second, I don't get it. If Yarrow Kikrasi is a problem because of Gmar Peri, why is the Ravid listed together with Lavan? And the Ravid says that's not an Esrog. If it's an issue of Gemara Peri, so, you know, let's wait till it turns yellow. It sounds like the Ravid holds that now it's green, it's possible. It's not a halacha of, well, is it mature, is it not mature? In other words, the yellowness of the esrog is not what I call a siman ledavar, it's a measuring rod to determine whether or not we have a pri that will reach its full maturation, Gemara Peri. But rather, it's a halacha that certain colors in the esrog are excluded. And one of the colors on the list of the Ravid is Yarrow Kikrasi. Now you'll ask me the following question. So if it's Yarrow Kikrasi, and it's possible according to the right, and what happens if it turns yellow? Every esrog theoretically could be green today and yellow tomorrow. So the answer is that in Hilchus Dalad Minim, and we've seen this over and over again, you can have something that in its natural state is possible, and then it becomes kosher. Can anybody think of any examples? In Hadas, what's the biggest problem in a Hadas? Which is the problem that you can't solve on Yom Tov, but you can solve the rest of the things. The Peros, correctly, Anovim. If there's Ribui Anovim, so the Mishnah tells us, right here on Daf Lamed Beis Amid Beis, that in Miatan Kosher, that all you have to do is be Mamayit them. Or I give you another example, Rabbi Yehuda Shita Nifridu Olav. Right, so right now, in its present state, the Lulav is possible. But if I do an aguda, is Rabbi Yehuda says I can be machshir the lulav. So you see very clearly that a min of the dalad minim could go through two stages. And initially in stage one it's possible, but in stage two I solve the problem and it becomes kosher. There's no din of dichui, what we call in kosher, right? That once became excluded and possible, it's excluded forever and ever. Here it's dichui meikara, we'll call it, or maybe it's dichui before yontif, whatever it might be, I don't know, you have to learn the sugya dichui. So the Ravid would say the following, that right now in its present state of green, that's not an esrog. Now for example, the Bach at the end of Tofresh Mem Zayin, he also says that according to Tosis, you have to wait until it actually turns yellow. But he says that for a totally different reason. He says, the Be'inan Hadar Volecha. Now, again, I like green, but the Bach is not, you know, we're not going to send the Bach to Canada because he's going to be shocked. Everything's green in Canada. So the Bach says that a green esrog is not Hadar. So the Taz is Lamafreya, is a garnish gehelfin, and you can't tell me that since later on it's going to become Hadar, that now when I'm Yotze, we use it for the mitzvah and it's green, that therefore I'm Yotze the mitzvah of Hadar. It's not Hadar. So you see already in the Bach that the Bach took Tosis very, very literally, very seriously. Kishachozrin, Leos Mareim, Kisharis Rogu, then and only then it became kosher. So we now have, I will say, three different approaches to Tosis. One approach to Tosis says that, you know what? We don't care whether it's green or it's yellow, as long as it will become yellow. And here the base mayor says, let's wait till it becomes yellow, just to calm ourselves down and make sure that it became yellow. The other approach is the same name. Tosa says only when it became yellow is it kosher. But there are two approaches. The Rambam's approach is that we have to wait until it becomes yellow, because otherwise it's no hadar. As long as it's green, it's not hadar. And the Ravid, way before the box, says that in its state as green, that's not a mara of an esrog. Because it's not. There are various givunim. You know, there are various, not givunim. I should say givanim. Sorry, it's two separate words. But givanim, there are various hues and colors of an esrog, and one of them is that it has to be yellow. And if it's not yellow, if it's yorek kakrasi, then it's possible. I'm going to now ask Alan to tell me about Dover Shalom Boli Olam and all that stuff, but first I just want to read the Mishnah Berurah. So the Mishnah Berurah is here at the end of Tav Resh Mem He, and the Mechaber says the following: Hayorok, if it's green, shedome la'asve hasode, it's as green as the grass that's growing in the sode, possible. Now let's try to understand the language of the Shulchan Aruch. It says Ella im Kain Choser Lemara Estro Kosher Kishamashin also. How would you interpret the Machaber? Is he saying that now it already turned yellow, or it will turn yellow Kishamashin also when they leave it for a time period of time?
When will?
Oh. Again, when or if it will?
If it will, well.
Let's read it one more time. Again, you could say that Elim came chazar, right? It's already yellow. Or Elim came chozer, I already can anticipate, and the Mishnah Berurah is going to give you a whole thing about meteorology and so forth to tell you why I can anticipate. Elim came chozer lamara esrog, meaning down the line, with the Tazis lamafreya. How do I know that? Because then he says kishamashin also. He's talking about a description of an esrog which is now green, but if I leave it, it will turn yellow. Now it's not yellow, it's green. And right away the Be'er Heitev in Sifkat and Chavav quotes the Taz, Kosov HaTaz Nira Perusho, what does it mean? Afilu bi'odo yorok kosher. Kamen sheyuchal lachzor lemara esrog. Yuchalas. He says the Eino Moshe Kosher Ella. Well, I don't know where that goes on to Ella Achar. Oh, here it is. Ella Achar Shenase Kamara Esrog. The Zepshita the Kosher. In other words, he's saying that the Taz is saying that what's the whole chiddush here if it already turned yellow? So we had a whole shtickel Torah. We want to say, okay, it turned yellow, but it turned yellow off the tree. And if it turned yellow off the tree, maybe that's not indicative of Gemara Peri. But he doesn't have that whole business. So the Taz says, if it already turned yellow, so what are you talking about? You're calling that an Esrog HaYorok? It's not an Esrog HaYorok, it's an Esrog HaTzal. And now in the Mishnah Berurah, he says here in Sifkot and Samachay Rotzal Lomar, Heicha Diad Inon Teva HaEsrogim Shevaoso Mokom. That in the nature of that place, it's interesting. Where did the Mishnah get this from? I think he got it from our Tosis, because Tosis says the Osam HaEsrogim HaBayim Lefanenu, in that area of the world, at that time of the universe, Ksherim Afilu Rav Yehuda. And now the Taz says they'll be kosher even though they're now green, and that's how we're learning the Mechaber, because we anticipate that down the line it'll become yellow, and Lamafreya, it's kosher. So the Mishnah Berurah says, Heicha di'ad inon. You know, he's probably worried about the Beis Meir, because the Beis Meir is lurking in the shadows here, and he's saying to you, why are you putting yourself into this thing, or as Yechiel said before, something brachas lahakel, but even more fundamentally, why are you putting yourself in such a jeopardy? He says, Heicha di'ad inon, we know about our esrogim, or the esrogim that are coming from wherever they're coming. Shedarkom lachzor acherkach lemara esrog liacher sheshohu bikli zman meruba. Oz, therefore, he says, afilu biodo yorok kosher. Dekevon shechozil lemareu, again, that's going to happen after yontif, let's say, is al karchach nigmar peri. Umikolokom eskimu achronu diein lismochal zelamaisa. you know, you shouldn't rely on the fact that Aris Rogiv by nature will turn yellow down the line. Elam Kane Hiskil b'miktas loshuv lemara esrog. You know, before Yom Tov, make sure that at least it begins to turn yellow. And the green color is not going to bother me. Once I see it began to turn yellow, I know that it's going to turn yellow down the line. Let me just see if he quotes the Beis Meir here. Just 1 second. Ayin. Wow. He quotes about 10 different acronym here in the Shaar Tzion. The Levush, Maram Padua, Maram Alshich. Wow. I never saw the Maram Alshich quoted. I know my Chumash. I'm going to quote him tonight in my Chumash class. Umagin Avram, Ushmus Yaakov, Ubal Asma, Shuvas Habach. Some sofer ubeis meir, the sharachon. So basically, all the achronim are saying to you: don't use a green esrog, but not because a green esrog is possible, but because maybe this green esrog is never going to turn yellow, and you're in deep trouble. If a birdie would promise you that it will turn yellow, then you can use it. And initially, he says, therefore, in our makomos, or that's where we get our srogim, it's yadua shebeteva adover, it will turn green, fine. But then he backtracks and he says, you know what, lamais, I'm getting very nervous because of skivu achronim, and he's got a who's list in achronim, and they all say, let's not rely on this, unless the esrog began to turn yellow. Okay, Alan, you're wrong. Dover shalom.
First of all, I want to ask about dover shalom, and he'll also ask about in making a bracha, Jewish Sufi brachas, and Hakel. The third question I have is what.
So you're on the list of Achron. I have to add your name here.
Yeah, it's sort of they learn how to spell it.
No, I don't mean Kermai. I meant to say your Hebrew name with a gimel at the beginning.
Right.
I think you once told me what it comes out to.
Yeah, I used to say it was from the Ma'arik.
The Ma'arik?
No, Ma'arik. Mem Alafrik.
Ma'ari.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So I'll add it here in my pencil. The Ma'ari says, anyways, don't rely on it. You don't know whether it's going to turn yellow or not.
The third thing is, what happens if it turns yellow on the first day of Yom Tov? And is that an Indian of Nolad?
Nolad? Yeah. No, Nolad means when you have something that doesn't exist in the world. Well, the color could change.
This is a kosher esrog. There's not a kosher esrog. It became.
So we call it too complete. Don't call it.
It's a sugya. Tikkun Mana. I discussed this at 8:30 this morning.
You
don't want to pluck the berries on Yom Tov because it's Tikkun Mana.
Right. So
what do you mean by Dom Shalom Olam?
But the thing that bothers me altogether, what bothers me altogether about this is that it says Chozer every year. Everybody repeats Shechozer, 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 Yachzer, and in fact, all of everything they say doesn't touch on the word Chozer, which means it goes back to what it was.
It goes back.
That's what Chozer means.
Yeah, well, that's not a good translation of the word Shechozer. Chozer means when it becomes kosher. And now I can establish that it's definitely kosher. That's what kosher means. I don't think kosher means that it goes back to its original state.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that I think that maybe Tosfos and maybe the Taz are trying to say the same sort of opinion, is that the color yellow is always in the peri. The peri is in there. It becomes uncovered when it reaches a certain stage of maturity.
In that case,
you don't have to worry about, first of all, double shalom, because it was there altogether.
It's genetically yellow.
It's yellow. It's just that whatever other pigments are in there, as it matures, goes away and uncovers the yellow that's in there. When you do that, so that's what it says with chozer, because there is yellow there already. It's just that it's not obvious to you.
Right.
In this case, you don't have to worry also. You don't have to worry about. Then there's only the machlokes. Is whether does it have to be yellow at the time you're making the bracha?
Right.
So that's machlokes. It has to be.
Yeah. And it seems the Mishnah Berurah passes. It doesn't have to be yellow, but you better convince yourself that it's going to become yellow. Therefore, wait till it becomes yellow.
There's no problem. There's really no problem because if it's the min that turns yellow, you know there's yellow within it. So for those mandomer that don't require that mama should have to be yellow at the time, it's not a problem because the pigment is already there.
But let me ask you guys another question on both sides. doesn't it seem to you from all the literature, and starting with Tosis, that it was quite common that esrogim were yellow, were green, and then they became yellow? That was quite common.
Well, of course.
So I don't understand. Torah Hivalu Manitzor, I read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Esrog Hayoro Kekresi Posse.
Right.
Well, if you were writing the Mishnah, would you write such a thing? Yeah. I would give you, if you were in my composition class, I would give you an F. I would fail you for that. What do you mean Yoro Kekresi is possible? That's not true. Right now it's Yoro Kekresi, but in a week from now it's going to be its own. And Itaya says Lamafrei it's kosher. When the base mayor says Lamafrei it's kosher, just that I don't want to rely on that. And the Mishnah Berurah writes, we come from a kolos where it's Teva Advar. So I don't get it.
Because
you know, you're going to have to say one thing, that the Mishnah was talking in a different context, in a different historical, geographic, mineralogical set of circumstances, and a Yoro Kekresi would never become yellow. So therefore it's possible. But it's not satisfying. You see, the Tosa says, Kishachozrim, that now it's possible. And that's why the Mishnah is so sinis dvarav, stama delishna, stimas dvarav, means when the Mishnah doesn't clarify and qualify, and it says that a green esrog is possible, it means just that. Well, a green esrog is possible.
But it may be saying is that within green there are variations within that, and a certain type of green that...
But Alan, if 90% of your esrogim are first green, and then they become yellow, why would the Mishnah tell me that a green esrog is possible when 90% of your esrogim are green and yet they're kosher?
Because what I'm trying to say is...
Does anybody feel for me? I mean, any empathy here?
I think it may allude to the... who, I don't know what you said before, that was concerned that the psul of Yarek is a psul of Hadar.
Right, the last bar.
Hadar can't be Lamafrei.
Correct.
It has to be B'shas Ma'aser.
Correct, that's why Tosis says Shechozer. In other words, the Bach builds castles in the sky on one word in Tosis, Kishechozrim. Then it's Hadar. But until it's Chozer, it's not Hadar.
So therefore,
the Mishnah says,
Yarek Kekresi is possible, it's saying that's okay to say even on 90% turn, because it matters when it turns. Because if it turns too late, even if it turns, according to this svara, then it's still, you still wearing yotzer. Tosis says
correct.
You are, but you wearing it because Tosis is holding the hunter, it's not obviously a critical condition.
No, again, Rabosa, you're missing the point here. The Bach is trying to interpret Tosis. The other Achronim tried to interpret Tosis. The Bach says that Tosis says, Kishe Chozrim. When it becomes yellow, then you can take it on the first day yotzer. You need a yellow esrog. Says the Bach, why? Because if it's not yellow, it's not hadar.
Right.
According to the Bach, I understand, number one, why Tosa says kishachozrim, and number two, I understand why the Mishnah gives you a flat answer that a yarok is possible.
Right.
Comes along, all the achronim, the list is as long vidigolus, I'm telling you, anyone's on this list, and they say, no, that's not what Tosa means. A green esrog is kosher. I just don't know if it's going to turn yellow. If I knew it would be turning yellow, like the Mishnah Berurah says, v'teva v'komos, blah, 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 then anachinami is kosher when it's green. So I don't get it. If it's kosher when it's green, why does Tosa say kisha chozer? And number two, why does the Mishnah tell me that an esrog ayarik is puzzle? You know what I'm saying? If you empathize with what I'm saying, I'm telling you that the Mishnah is against all the achronim. That's a pretty scary thing to say, Rabos. It doesn't make me feel very comfortable to say that the Mishnah is against the entire list of achronim, all the rabbanim.
So I was going to ask you, how do we know Tosa is talking about the chatchilu, not the bidyavet? When Tosa says that they brought out the sorghum in our shuk, and I looked at them, they're green, and I said they're our kosher, maybe it means with the other. The mice said, if I had a yellow one, I wouldn't take this
well,
one.
Well, wait a second, Yichil, which pshat are you going? Are you going with our pshat of Shechozrim,
no, so
which is the Bach,
say,
or are you going with the other Achronim?
So if I say the Mishnah,
like all the other
says, says they're all, it's possible, yeah, like, it gives you, like, even though I know 90% turn yellow, possible, why? Because the chatchilu, you shouldn't use it, right? With the Evid, I can rely on the fact it's going to turn yellow later, maybe Tosa was talking about the Evid.
It's hard to say that. Okay, why you feel? Because the word puzzle appears in this parrot 1,000 times. And it doesn't mean
Well, I'm relying on what the Urayim said last.
Oh, the Urayim. Oh, yeah.
I'm relying on the fact that he brings Raya
to the Sultan. Yeah, but the Evangelist
brought Raya. He doesn't always say that. That's why I'm saying it.
Right.
And he learned it in Tosafos.
But again, you know, the heavy evidence against the Urayim is also...
I'm
just saying, I'll be Derech HaPshat, leaving out the Urayim. You're an Ibn Khalkum because we know about the Urayim, but, you know, Derech HaPshat, when the Mishnah says it's possible, it doesn't mean, you know what, maybe you shouldn't avoid it. In fact, the Mishnah Brura, in his initial presentation, when he talks about those Makomos, he paskins that you could use an Ibn Khalkum in those Makomos. But then he's worried about the Achron. You know, the Mishnah Brura takes a step back. But in pure halacha, the Mishnah Brura would say, go ahead. Because all that Tosis is talking about is what's going to happen later on.
Yes.
Tosis doesn't mean that for Yom Tov I have to put it into this box, into a vessel, and have to wait this man Meruba. No! Tosis saying that's going to happen after Yom Tov. I don't even think Tosis for a minute, according to those Achron, meant to say that we have to actually do the test. Anyway, it's for following, right? There's no tashlumin for this mitzvah. But I mean more than that. Tosus is saying that I can guarantee you that that's what's going to happen. All our esrogim are green and then they turn yellow. That's basically what he's telling us. In Europe, that's what we have.
So your question is...
You know, what happened in Shanghai, you know, during World War II? I don't know. Maybe they had a different mitzvah. But our esrogim, Tosus, turn yellow. And it may take a while, they'll turn yellow. I don't think Tosis needs Lemaisa, you know, to do a litmus test and wait till it turns yellow so that I'll be happy and I'll say to the Rebbeinu Shlom, if dafnish, I don't have to clap al chayt because I wasn't yotze the mitzvah, you know, for a mitzvah say, or bring a carbon ola for a bittul assay. I don't think that's what Tosis says anymore. So I'm just pointing out to you, Rabbi Osai, that sometimes I feel, that's just my argosha leiv, we should be honest to the text. Everything is text. Rav Soloveitchik supposedly said, I never heard it from him, that 90% is text, if you read the text carefully. Now, I'm not saying I follow that rule, because to read the text carefully, you really have to spend a lot of time, and I don't always have that time. But in this case, when Tosis used the words kishechozrim, what's taich in the word kishechozrim? It doesn't mean im yachzer. Tosis knows Hebrew. He could have said, kevandi im chozer, is there for Yotzi Yudei Chavos, it's kosher. No, that's not what Tosis. So it says, Kishek Chozrim. And the Mishnah says that a Esrog HaYorok is possible. Maybe that's not such a big riot, because you could say the Mishnah was addressing a different Mitzias. You know, the Mitzias at the time of the Mishnah was that most Esrogim, by the time you cut them off the tree, they were yellow. And those Esrogim that were green never turned yellow.
Well, think about that for a second. The Mishnah was written there at Israel. And at Israel, they grew Esrogim. The Esrog, right. The time from cutting until it showed up in the store to buy it could have been a day. And if it was green already, you know, if it didn't already turn, Mistubbin maybe it wasn't going to. It could have been weeks after it was cut.
Let me ask you a question, Yechiel. Your Esrog that you buy, don't you buy local Esrog? And again, you could get an Italian Esrog.
That's my point.
But I'm asking you, have you never seen a green Esrog? When I go to the shuk, like half the Esrogim are green. Even the other half are probably green as well, just that they became yellow. So what I'm trying to say is that in our Mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, again, I don't say at the time of the Mishnah, it was the same, because the Mishnah was written, how many centuries ago? 1800 years ago? I don't know exactly. You'll check it out with Art School, exactly when the Mishnah was authored. Could be a different Mitzvahs. But I think in the Mitzvahs that we live in, it's exactly what Tosis is describing here in Europe. That our esrogim are green and they turn yellow. I think. Again, you know, I have to ask the experts. Which, by the way, I'm trying to get in touch with one of the experts to come here. Did I mention it to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have to make another call today. Of course, the guy I had in mind says that if it's an English-speaking audience, I have something better for you. That's what he said about himself, because he's a Hebrew speaker. He says I can break my teeth in English, but you'll get a lot more from another fellow. So believe that I'm going to try to call him today. Okay, now we get to Min, I guess. So let me just introduce our next topic, and this is a real doozy. If you look at the next two lines in the Gemara again wants to prove that Rabbi Yehuda requires Hadar, and how do I prove, which undermines everything we've been saying, because it says that the Shir Esrog Katan, in other words, what's the minimum size of an esrog? Is Rabbi Meir says it has to be at least the size of an egos, which I assume is a walnut. If anyone knows otherwise, please tell me. Mm-hmm. And Rabbi Yehuda says kibetz, it has to be the size of an egg, which is a little bit larger. So now I have an esrog that's, let's say, as large as a walnut, but not as large as an egg. So what does Rabbi Yehuda say about that? Possible. So Gemara says, my love, mishum deboi hadar. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda also requires hadar. So on this whole business of sheer esrog katan, we have a tosfos. It looks innocuous. It's the, you know, it's the it's, let's say, one, two, three, the fourth tosfos before the end of the page. It looks innocuous. I've been spending hours on this tosfos and I still can't figure it out. But believe it or not, I hope by tomorrow we'll have. Okay, thank you so much. Now I gotta get a